Today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by DB. DB is a Scandinavian brand that makes backpacks and bags to help people on the move stay ready for anything. From the streets to the peaks, DB's gear is travel tested by some of the world's best athletes, adventurers, and creators. Over the past decade, DB has designed and developed, released, and refined the best bags in the market. With DB's patented hookup system, you are able to attach smaller products to your backpack, roller, or tote. We are teaming up with DB to exclusively offer our listeners 10% off your next purchase by using the code POD10 or going to our link in the show notes. DB, it's time to move on, time to get going.
Support for the Outlap F1 podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, everyone. Manscaped has just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and all the time. Manscaped has been trusted by over 2 million men worldwide, so join the movement now for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. We already know that Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. The same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to your collection. It's light, approachable, and gentlemanly-like in all the right ways. Think of it as your roommate for the night in the town to keep you fresh and ready for anything. It's calming and inviting. This signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in for an incredible woodsy and masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hypoallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and 100% vegan. It even comes in a beautifully designed glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent sets the mood for any occasion. I've been personally using this product for about a month, though, and let me tell you, it smells incredible, and my significant other has certainly been enjoying it as well. Right now, our listeners of the Outlap F1 podcast can get 20% off plus free shipping by using the code OUTLAP, that's OUTLAP, one word, at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna, your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 34 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. This is our summer break news recap. I'm Andy. I'm along with James and Deanna. We've had a whole lot of stuff kind of go down in the last couple of weeks. If you've been following us on social media, you've definitely seen a lot of that. So, folks, how are we doing this fine evening?
I am doing great. It's been a pretty quiet week, which is pretty rare. So I'll take it. Yeah.
I would take a quiet week, but I haven't had that. So I was actually looking forward to getting on talking some F1 news. Unfortunately, no driver moves or anything to talk about, but I think we can find some things.
Yeah, none of the big thing. Unfortunately, we don't have resolution on George Russell or Valtteri Bottas or the linchpin that's going to kick all that off. But we'll get into some stuff here. So you can find our show on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. Please see our link tree for all of those appropriate links. You can email our show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can find our beautiful website at www.outlapf1.com. On that site, you can find our F1 for Beginners episode, Season 3, Episode 6. Please do check that out. If you are a new fan, I am running into new fans talking about Drive to Survive pretty much all the time. Coming up now that they realize kind of what I do. So, you know, we're all for that. So, soup to nuts, everything about the sport we love and love to talk about, Formula One, that is on there for you. We can also find our Sabre Cook interviews. That is Season 2, Episode 2, and Season 3, Episode 21. Sabre Cook W Series driver currently on the circuit, and we'll be back, I think, in Spa. Or a couple of other places that we will be following really closely. You can find Relapped with Deanna, her race reaction to Nashville, her best shots of our trip, some that worked out well and some of them worked out not so well, but you can find them all up there. I love the ding with the caution counter That was my personal favorite. So check that out if you are so inclined. And just as a reminder, you can find our it does cost money to do all this stuff. So if you want to throw us $1, $5, $2, whatever, you can find our Anchor link in our show notes. We will have that there for you. And just as one final reminder, we continue to be partners with the good folks at Manscaped. So please do take advantage of the 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That is code OUTLAP. Before we get into some news, James was not on our Nashville recap, and I just wanted to kind of give him an opportunity to put a bow on that trip and any observations, thoughts, or anything about the 3 days with the four of us. What'd you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been to Nashville many, many, many times. I always have a good time in Nashville. I think this was a great atmosphere, a great city for an IndyCar race, especially a street race. So atmosphere just kind of blew me away the whole weekend. Of course, it was awesome hanging out with you guys in person and meeting Deanna in person for the first time. Gave me an opportunity, which we're kind of used to on the show, but John was wrong. I was right. Nailed Deanna's height perfectly. So John seems to think you're some sort of giant, but not true. But yeah, I mean, I think there was the track was cool. I think there's tweaks that can be made for sure. They can definitely do a better job with maybe some signage on how to get to your seats would be helpful.
That would be helpful.
Yep.
I mean, I had a really good time. The stadium truck series was really fun, I thought. What was it? The Super GT cars. I always confuse the name, but that was pretty cool. Drank a lot of beers, sweat all of them out almost as quickly as I was drinking them. still had fun with that. And then we topped it off by getting attacked by birds on our way back to the city. So the trip really had everything. And, you know, we got to see a former Formula One driver win the race, and it wasn't Romain Grosjean. Thankfully. I was shocked and appalled by the amount of Romain Grosjean t-shirts and jerseys we saw. Very disappointed in you fellow American race fans, but what can you do?
Well, that's Drive to Survive, and the dude survived fire. So yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what I was actually impressed with the amount of F1 merch just in general that I saw.
Yeah.
You know, being worn by people in a market that you didn't think expect to be a huge into racing. So
yeah. And I almost forgot we were just a few feet from Tony Kanaan, unbeknownst to Andy. And then me and Deanna are pretty sure we almost got ran over by a 13-year-old. I don't remember his name. Who was that? Whose kid is that?
Oh, Robbie Gordon's kid.
Robbie Gordon's kid, yeah. On a motorcycle, which was weird.
Yep.
And then we realized, oh, yeah, he's racing in the Stadium Truck Series as a 13-year-old. So that was pretty cool.
Well, the Tony Kanaan is right up there with me almost getting run over by Roger Penske's golf cart the last time I was in Detroit. So, you know, I'm just a big roadblock, and I get in the way, and that's what I do.
I still think you should have taken the dive there, Andy. If you're going to get hit by somebody, that's a pretty good person to get hit by.
Oh, yeah. No, that would have been. Unfortunately, his driver pilots the golf cart a lot better than I do and did a quick move. And Roger gave me a look like I was in trouble. So sorry about that for a couple of years ago. All right. So just to kind of get into our news episode here, we got word this morning. I got word roughly about 3 a.m. this morning, that the Japanese Grand Prix has been officially axed off of the calendar. That has come down due to the COVID spike with the Delta variant in Japan. F1 and Liberty have stated publicly that they are still committed to 23 races. I don't know how that's technically supposed to happen now. We still know that Mexico and Brazil are still in a bit of doubt. They are, I think, currently still on the red list in the UK, which is a big deal. USA race or races, I would put in the marginal category. I have been trying to work as many sources as I can. I've been on forums and everything, trying to get anything out of that. They are still going ahead with all the track prep as of right now. So as of today, the race at COTA scheduled for October the 24th is still a go. I would watch what MotoGP, which is scheduled to have the Grand Prix of the Americas on October 3rd, watch what they do. And watch what South by Southwest does in Austin. So, yeah, we are praying that hospital capacity can be good by the time this rolls around for our calendar. We have a lot of big plans, so it would really, really, really put a damper on my fall if the USA gets canceled again. But we will keep on top of it. Like I said, I'm working as many sources as I possibly can to try to figure out what's going on. But I've not heard anything official from the track other than it's all things go full capacity as of right this second.
Fingers crossed.
Yep. Because I think they just, it was questions for the Dutch Grand Prix, but they said only 67% capacity. So I don't want them to do something like that. Could I be like, ah, it's you lose?
Well, yeah,
that
exactly.
would be my luck. Out of the four of us, I think it would just be me. I would just get taken back.
Oh, we no. I mean, I certainly don't. I don't want them to do anything like that because then it becomes a lottery, and then certain people win and certain people lose.
Is that how it's decided?
Oh, that's how Zandvoort did it. Like if you bought tickets and you were part of the third that's not going to get to go, you're going to get your money back, and that's really all about they can do. Yeah. So I mean,
we'll sneak you.
I was going to say I have ways. But I guess the moral of the story is expect more calendar changes, especially now with the final flyaways. Like I said, I don't know how they're supposed to get 23 races in, but they seem still committed to do that. So, I mean, a lot of the calendar people were all out on social media today trying to figure out, you know, would Sepang work? Would this work? They're going to come out with something when they can. You know, the thing about Sepang is I love that track, but nobody showed up the last time they were there. That's why that race is off the calendar. It's not that F1 doesn't work there. It's that the audience just didn't show up. So we will see what happens with that. So follow us on our social media at Outlap F1 Podcast for any announcements, as we will pass them on when we get them. We had an IndyCar race in between our respective trips. IndyCar raced at the Indy Motor Speedway on the road course, and Will Power took the win. James, you probably were the most recent to see the highlight package of it, so you want to give us just a quickie recap?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty entertaining race from the recap I saw. I haven't been able to watch the whole thing just yet. I think the first highlight that jumped out to me was McLaughlin going off, maybe kind of mixing in a little bit of Stadium Truck Series into the IndyCar race there, because he jumped that corner, so that was pretty cool. And then I was actually pretty excited when Palau went out with engine failure, not going to lie. Kind of a bummer with Pato starting on pole and only finishing in, I think it was fifth, right? So he did claw back a little bit of the lead that Palau's got. He's back in second. I want to say it's like 21 points that he's behind there, so still definitely in it. Kind of depending on what happens here in St. Louis in a few days. But I think overall the race seemed pretty good. Roman Grosjean with a podium. And it's been funny seeing the podium meme going around, because it's like exactly what happened at that race. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but when Grosjean's drinking the champagne and the other two dudes are just standing there, there's an exact cartoon meme just like that. So it's getting pretty good. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty good race. I like that racetrack for sure. I wouldn't mind going down there maybe next year and checking that out if we can't go to the actual Indy 500. But yeah, I mean, the more I watch IndyCar, the more I like it. It's definitely an exciting racing series for sure.
Yeah, I think overall, though, my favorite part of the day, I mean, it does kind of bring back in what should IndyCar's blue flag rules be, but Hinch holding up Power for a lot of laps, pitting and still coming back out in front of him, even though he should have been lapped at that point, and pushing him back towards his teammate Herta. I think the top four were spread out between about 15 seconds, and by the end of that, they were well within four. And that would have been, I think, a fun ending to begin with, but then Palou's engine decided it had enough. but yeah, I think, yeah, overall, exciting race. Kind of really picked up the pace at the end there, but yeah, love Indy. It's a great time.
And at one point there, Alexander Rossi was trying to become my new IndyCar villain, because him and Pato O'Ward were going after it a little bit there. So some exciting, some good racing there, but it was close.
Yeah,
marginal on the limit, but ultimately clean. Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining race. I was fully entertained by it. It, you know, all of a sudden you knew Palou was in trouble because he was having engine mapping issues, but it seemed like they were managing it, and then it eventually then fails. He's going to have more engine pain. This may be a thing as they come down to the end. Every new engine he has to take results in a sixth place grid penalty for him. So he will have that again happen this weekend in St. Louis. So that has major championship implications. So even if he gets the pole, he will start no better than sixth on the grid on Saturday.
Well, I was just going to ask a question about something else for Pato Awards Day. It seemed like he was really chewing up his tires more than other cars. And I was just wondering if that's more of a kind of indicator of his style of driving, or I've heard a lot that they think that that Arrow car, the Arrow McLaren car, is like the hardest car on the grid to drive. And I don't know if that's mostly just pumping up Pato Award being better than he may actually be, even though I think he's awesome. But yeah, it seemed like, so I don't know if that tire issue is that's a car issue or more of the driver style issue. I was going to see what you think, Andy.
Probably, I would say a combination of both. I know that that car has been, I mean, Rosenquist has struggled mightily with that car. He was just finally seeming to finally get kind of on par with it. But Pato's, you know, with the ninja hands and everything, has probably wrung everything he probably could out of it. It's kind of been a theme of his that, you know, his stuff tends to fade kind of near the end. And that's why, you know, he's had all those second places. That's usually, that doesn't have the pace necessarily at the end of a race. Yeah, I mean, yeah. If he can get it on top of it, I mean, he's got his, this is his best shot for the championship. It's all to play for. And Palou mm-hmm. looks, you know, a little bit wounded. So I think it's all there for him.
Yeah. But I think probably the best bit of the weekend was awards qualifying lap. I mean, you can see him take it to the edge, and I think it almost looks like he loses it. And it kind of looks like when Dixon lost it earlier in an earlier round of qualifying. But he manages to hold on and barely eke out pole, which was awesome to see.
The graphics missed it.
Yeah. It's very, very exciting to watch Tim drive, absolutely. What effect that has on the car? Over the long term is probably a bit questionable, but yeah, I think it was like on his first stint, everybody else was on the alternates and he was on the primaries and was supposed to run long, but just couldn't make them last. And then kind of got caught up in the rest.
Yeah. So just one final note, we will be in St. Louis, starting on Friday. Deanna and I will be there along with John, and we will be meeting up with the good folks from the Formation Lap podcast that we've done some collaboration with them. I don't exactly know exactly what's going to happen on this trip, so watch our social media. We will be taking pictures and seeing what we can see. Whatever St. Louis has to offer, we're going to try to do our best to kind of soak it in. I don't know how much it is, if anything, but we'll find out.
don't have high hopes. Bump, I can't hang out with you guys this weekend, but not really allowed back in St. Louis, so I'm going to have to sit this one out.
Okay, so just as a little side note on IndyCar, their promoters have confirmed that the final three rounds on their calendar, which are scheduled to be kind of on the West Coast, including the last race at Long Beach, will go on as scheduled. So that's good news. That looks to be full capacity, no restrictions for IndyCar. So we're going to get a full IndyCar championship. There were a couple rounds that were moved around, but it looks like we're going to get all the races that we were promised. So that's good. We'll be able to see this championship, which is getting closer and closer every race, come all the way to fruition. So I think that's a good thing, and we're happy to see that. All right. Next story. This is kind of an interesting topic. Ferrari and Red Bull, now that we are now in the cost cap, they have led a charge to try to get teams to pay for damage done to their cars as a result of the cost cap. I don't know exactly how I feel about this, but what are thoughts on getting your opponents, if they screw up and wreck you, do they have to foot the bill to fix your car?
Like, it's just a solid no for me. And I don't think, I mean, looking at Ferrari this season, I think the three big kind of incidents was Leclerc crashing himself in Monaco and qualifying. Sainz had a pretty big one in Hungary and qualifying. And then the one where Leclerc got taken out by Stroll, and now Mattia's just kind of up in arms. But I mean, if we look back a year, then we have Leclerc taking out Stroll, even though he didn't get a penalty for it. Another big problem is this puts a lot more power in the hands of the stewards, which we already have enough issue with. They don't also need to be allocating payments that these teams need to make, percentages potentially, or just like fully offering blame when maybe there shouldn't be blame, and then you just have a lot bigger implications involved in those decisions, which I don't think should happen. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Ferrari would have liked that rule last year, with, again, Leclerc taking out Stroll last year. I mean, granted, it was his teammate, but he also took out Vettel. So I think anytime you've seen Leclerc, some first lap, it gets a little iffy. So I'm like, not sure that you really want to like offer yourself up for that, Ferrari, but okay. But I think, no, I don't think any other racing series on the planet that is a rule. I think it's part of the risk. You take those risks and you accept the consequences. It's just, it's in the rules, and it is what it is. Figure out a way to deal with it.
I'm mostly with Deanna here. I don't like the idea of this at all. The biggest thing to me was the stewards issue. Like, I'm not trying to give them more power and more decisions to make, because the inconsistency then could get really weird. I'm just like trying to think of maybe other alternate ideas. Like, maybe if you get into a crash and it's clearly not your fault, maybe only half of it goes against your cap. I don't know, something like that. But this version, I'm not a fan of at all. I mean, I'd be willing to listen to other ideas, but not a fan of this one at all.
Yeah, I think it finally comes down to the fact that all these teams are going to have to learn to adjust to being in a cost cap, and that usually sometimes means, you know, and that I think you have to budget some sort of a crash reserve instead of throwing every dollar to unfettered development that you have been. And that's been the culture, is, you know, every extra dollar we get, we throw research and development at it. We throw wind tunnel time through it. We throw people at it, whatever. You can't do that anymore in a cost cap. You've got teams in other professional sports that are always right up against the salary cap. And if one of their major guys gets hurt, well, they're in some trouble. And you've got other teams that can manage the cap a little bit better. And when they have issues pop up, they're ready to react to it. So I think this is just a part of sport. I don't want to see the stewards have any more power than they already do. There is no need for any more stewarding decisions other than what they already have on their plates. It's a tough job, and I don't want them to have any more issues that they have to do, especially 3 hours after a race, trying to figure out the money of who's going to pay for what. That's crazy. I think we're all in agreement. The current proposal, I don't like either. And, you know, maybe they'll come up with something better as we navigate the cost cap. All right. So next story. This is kind of just an ugly, ugly, nasty story, but it did come out over the weekend. The CEO at Spa-Francorchamps, Nathalie Malliet, was killed in an apparent murder-suicide. You could read the story on Motorsport and try to get all the specifics of it. I'm going to just kind of let that go. That was not exactly fun to read. We extend our condolences out to her. So Formula E has concluded its seventh season. We have Nyck de Vries, who came out of all of that as the first ever Formula E actual world champion, because I guess the FIA decided to call Formula E this year a world championship, so good for him. In spite of all the weird and craziness that we got out of this season, we did probably get, I think, at least in my opinion, a deserving champion. I think he makes a case for being probably the first guy from FE to maybe get back into F1. Deanna, what's your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, so I think just a mini recap of the weekend. So the first race, I think, was the better of the two. It was a bit of fun. You had Tichita, Audi, and Venturi all being 1-2 at some point in that race. Eventually, Lucas Grassi ended up taking that win. But then going into the last race, you had De Vries leading. And then I'm going to get the order of this wrong, but I think it was Evans, Mortara, and Dennis were 2 through 4. Well, those three. So Evans stalled somehow on the start line, got plowed by Mortara. So that takes out those two. And then a few minutes later, Dennis, it said he like heard a weird noise and the rear axles of his car locked up. So he ran into the wall and he retired. So in under 5 minutes, we had lost two of the four top runners. And then after that, De Vries, I think, was the highest running of the contenders that were left. All of them were out of the points. And it was all of these people that typically aren't kind of running way up high in the points all the time that were up there. And so it was just kind of a somewhat anticlimactic win. De Vries was getting very, very aggressive, though, through the final stint when he was probably perfectly fine. Although at the end, I think he could have retired and still been okay. But it was just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? But he does hold on, and he takes the first ever technically world championship title for Formula E, making him the very first ever Dutch world champion. And so after him and Mercedes take the world titles, the next day they announce that they are pulling out of Formula E. So that is just Formula E in a nutshell, I think.
Yeah, we take our ball and we go home. That's basically what Mercedes have tried to pull.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It continues to Formula E all over itself, even when you don't think it needs to. It's just constant. I mean, the last race, you're right. I mean, we had this situation where you had four potential world champions taking the grid, and within the first minute, two of them are gone because they've hit each other. I mean, how Mitch Evans stalls it on the grid, I still haven't figured that one out. And then the Jake Dennis thing, as he's crashing, he's screaming on the radio, oh, my God, I'm crashing. Well, yeah. So, I mean, he kind of did that to himself, and all basically Nyck de Vries had to do was finish, which he did. Just a strange, weird, crazy season for Formula E. And then, yeah, the post-race mortem on that is, you know, Mercedes, who I think they run four cars and a whole lot of power units and stuff like that for other teams, are just pulling out of it, proves that all electric is really hard to be road relevant. And that's basically the business decision that Mercedes have gone. It looks like they want to pursue more alternative fuels, hydrogen, biofuel, that type of thing. And here's an opportunity, I think, for F1 to get the jump on it. They were kind of put on the back foot when Formula E got that patent or the thing that said, you know, F1 can't run all electric for like 90 years or something like that. If F1 can get the jump on alternative fuels or biofuel, you can have really, really loud screaming engines again and be environmentally safe and be fun, and let's go racing. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's where I'd like this to go. But I think Mercedes, they also supply Venturi, which that was Norman Nato.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say it. Yeah. He took his first win. So it was all around like an amazing weekend for Mercedes, and then here we are. So I don't know if they'll still supply. I don't know if you know the answer to that, Andy, but we'll see. So, yeah, it's just... as well as Audi and BMW pulling out, it does seem like we're getting a weird shift. And I think the Gen 3 cars come next year. Yeah. So I don't know how much that plays a part of it. I don't keep up that close with it, but it does seem like that is not what some of these manufacturers think are the future. Or at least will lead to future development for their real cars.
Yeah, definitely. James, any thoughts on Formula E in general or anything you wanted to add?
Not really any positive ones. So I'll keep those myself. I mean, for me, Formula E is tough, has been tough to get into just because I never know when it is or how to watch it. And like, I can be kind of lazy with that. And it's like, I don't want to have to go searching around to try and watch it. Like I got upset enough when we had to watch stuff on the Peacock app down in Nashville to watch qualifying and stuff. And it's like, this is too much work. Why can't I just turn on Channel 5 and have the race? I mean, I've seen some cool races in it, but I haven't kept up with it. So Deanna made it sound interesting, so good job, I guess.
No, I think it's a championship that does definitely have its moments, but I think as long as it, what bothers me about it is like they have a great moment and then they want to replicate it and they try to set it all up so it keeps replicating that same, you know, end of the race where everybody's running out of energy and who makes it, who doesn't type of thing. You don't have to do that. I mean, The racing, because the cars are slower, the aero is better. And yeah, I know some of the street tracks are kind of annoying, but the race product itself actually isn't bad. What I'm concerned about when we say, does Nyck de Vries make a case for F1, is the driving style is so different. What you learn to do in Formula E versus what you're going to have to go relearn in Formula One is such different. Because in Formula E, you're all about being efficient. Not necessarily always being fast, not always necessarily about getting the most out of every corner. In Formula One, you're trying to make every corner, make time, make, you know, tenths of a second here and there all the time. So will we see it? I mean, he's put his best case. I hope actually it does. It would make that championship a little bit more relevant. But for sure, he will be at the FIA Gala at the end of the year. And congratulations to Nyck de Vries. So that's pretty much all we've got for tonight. kind of a short and sweet one. As I mentioned earlier, we will be in St. Louis this weekend. So again, check out our social media, check out the Formation Lap stuff as well. I will be recording with them in the ESPN radio studios on Sunday morning or early afternoon before taking the trek home. So watch out for that. I will be promoting that on my social media, and we'll probably have that out as well through our show account too. So for James, Deanna, it's been Andy. Always, as always, super fun bringing this to you, and may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.